everybody. Once again, welcome to another Professional Goblins podcast. I'm one of your wonderful hosts, Scott Gladstein, and with me as always is...
Mike Myler. Hi, everyone. How are you doing?
And the always fantastic and zany...
Savannah Broadway, joined perhaps by my co-pilot, Pelly the Cockatiel.
Sometimes. And Jay, sometimes. I hear we have a guest today. Mr. Gray, how are you?
I am a guest. Yes. Hello, everybody.
So, who are you? Why do we care about you? What's your name? What's your profession? What's your favorite color? And do you think Savannah's hair is awesome or just great?
I want to say his name, actually, because okay. I have a writer's rule that this will come in handy for. So, you guys told me his name was James Gray, G-R-E-Y. And I was like, that's weird, because he's from America. And we spell Gray with an A. And the way to remember this is Americans spell Gray with an A, and English spell Gray with an E. And it's an alliterative tool I've used for years. So, James Gray with an A, please tell us about yourself.
Well, first of all, no one is going to find any of my books under James because I write as J, just the letter Gray. But, and unfortunately, I didn't realize that until after I signed up for Facebook and they said, give us your real name. I was like, okay, I'll give you my real name. But my name is Jay Gray. I work for a couple different companies out there, Playground Adventures, Fat Goblin Games, Flaming Crab Studios Games. And I have done books for Pathfinder for 5th edition, for Hero Kids, adventure supplements, all the like.
So you've done a thing or two, you're saying?
I have done a thing or two, three years worth of things or twos.
Cool. That's many things and twos.
Yes. Also, her hair is slightly above awesome.
It works casting.
All right, slightly above awesome. I knew I liked it. So, if you guys don't know or you've never seen the show before, first off, welcome. Oh my God, you're a lucky bastard.
Assuming this is a. Like the parentage of the viewership is inappropriate.
Let's say, actually speaking, I am a bastard. So
I know that, and I don't want you to bring your bastardness into the presentation of the show like
all right,
that.
All right, hey,
come on, dude.
That's it. I'm here, so I guess this is a bit of a bastardized show. So anyway, for you bastards or non-bastards, I'm not going to assume anything about you, your parents,
orphans who don't know,
or
right. Orphans.
All right, so we're off topic. We're off to a good start today. This has a bit of a segmented format. We got a few sections. We're going to start off with telling some game stories, and we're going to roll on through some other topics. At the end, James here is going to have a section to talk about whatever he would like, including the burning of orphanages and or the assumption of people's parentage.
You know I write for
that
a
escalated.
Company, right?
That went straight to burning orphanages? Like, okay. All right.
Well, funnily enough, I have something to talk about with burning orphanages.
Oh, good. So let's start with that.
Fantastic.
Yeah, there we go. So my learning game was this year at New Year's. My group decided that they wanted to ring in the New Year's with Curse of Strahd. Which is always good. However, two of the people couldn't make it, and so we were discussing what we were going to do because we just started the game. We didn't want to like move the plot forward too much without folks. And so what we decided happened was we ran through the Tomb of Annihilation. And so the in-world excuse was that my warlock, Sempronius, who occasionally burns down orphanages completely by accident, he'll assure you, and he's definitely not lying.
As one does.
Right. Well, you know, clearly that orphanage was a front for Thieves Guild trainees, and he was just doing the City Watch a favor. He doesn't know why everyone's angry.
I don't trust any player who does not have at least one gaming story where they burn down an orphanage.
Yeah.
To be fair, this is like my first one, and it's not even in game. I feel like I've, I don't know, like it's a rite of passage or something.
It is
totally detonated once. Does that count?
Yeah, there was combustion.
Yeah.
But yeah, so our in-game excuse for suddenly being level 9 and having all this cool gear and also being in the Tomb of Annihilation was that Sempronius got something suspicious from a dealer outside the fortune teller's tent where everyone met. And the guy told him that the first one was free, so he put a dose in everyone's drink that night because they made him go get the water. And he thought it would be great. Everyone needs a chance to loosen up. They're all so, like, tense and tight-laced, and he's doing them all a favor.
Yeah, as one does.
And took some himself as sort of a personal show of good faith. And so we had this crazy fever dream trip where we were in the Tomb of Annihilation and no one died.
Fantastic.
Wow.
We had like a 6-hour session.
Let's say, it doesn't seem like it lives up to its name, though. If it's a Tomb of Annihilation, everyone lived. Was anyone annihilated?
Right. Well, you know, to be fair, we were like, we scratched the top layer. Ah. Like, we maybe took off the varnish of the Tomb of Annihilation. Ah, okay. Apparently this is that
so maybe,
gesture.
Maybe in reciprocation you should have gotten, like, slightly singed, this tomb of slightly singed?
It's probably not. It was funny, though, because there's apparently a curse on the place that, because reasons, if you've been brought back from the dead at any time, you start with 20 less hit points.
Ooh.
And so my character, like, a part of his backstory is that he was resurrected by Bahamut and cursed.
Yes, the dragon character, yeah.
Yeah. So that was his whole backstory. So he starts with 20 less hit points. He's a warlock. He doesn't get a lot anyway. Yeah. And the GM's like, oh, well, I can knock it down to like 15 if you want. I'm like, no, this character's garbage. Like, he deserves it. So yeah, that's my gaming advice. If you're having, like, if you have some players down and you don't want to play without them, just like play an alternate universe thing.
I gotcha.
I've started a new trend actually this week where if we're waiting for people or they're late or whatever, we'll just play Overwatch instead because we all have Overwatch. Well, so boom.
There we go.
Yeah.
So
we ended up playing a game.
Your mileage may vary.
Because like somebody was an hour and a half late and another guy didn't show up. So then we had played Overwatch for like an hour. The guy showed up and we ended up playing with just like two players and me for, you know, 3 hours.
Hey man, small groups are good.
Yeah. But I'm just saying, like, if we didn't have that, like, let's just go do this activity and wait.
Yeah. Wouldn't
have a session.
Yeah.
Myself a little bit. There we go. So, Mike, do you have a gaming story this week, or is that it?
Let's see. What do we got? I'll leave it to you three. Everyman in Brain Surgery, Baron Tor Wildbeard, which is why 3.0 clerics are terrible, or Timothy Cleaver?
Well, why don't we let our guest choose here?
Yeah, go
All
for it,
All eyes are on you now.
The last intrigues me because there's no information about it.
Timothy Cleaver. Okay. So my friend was running a 3.0 game, and he was just like, anything you want to do. So the first character was Baron Tor Wildbeard, which we'll talk about later. And the second character, I was like, okay, well, let's go for like a really cool concept. And in 3.0, they had these things called Necropolitans, which was basically a way to play an undead PC race. Mm-hmm. But like a straight up skeleton undead PC race. Not like a revenant, not like a zombie, but like a skeleton NPC.
Nice.
Or PC, rather. So we made this like kid who was like 13 when he got caught in this dark ritual that made him a Necropolitan. So he ends up becoming this like sort of like a go-to guy in the north because like he doesn't care about cold shit, right? Mm-hmm. Like, let's go. And he ended up joining the party, but he was a necromancer. So he had all these like not just skeleton warriors, but because it was the north, Remoras, because you could animate anything back in 3.0. It was
right.
very open. And Remoras are these like super huge, giant, like death breathing fire ice worms.
Mm-hmm.
So after the first one, he was like, well, I want to have more than one around. So, like, even if I'm not going to use this one in combat, because that's rude. It's rude to play a conjurer or a necromancer and, like, I will take my 17 turns now. Like, don't do that shit. Nobody wants to be at the table with you. So he had just like, you know, the horde of skeleton warriors and remoras, and that was good. But in case that one died, he had another remoras, which was also filled with skeleton warriors, and we called it the Bone Giant. And to top it all off, Timothy, because he was, mind you, he was like still very much a 13-year-old kid, rode around on a blink dog that was also undead, that he called Blinky.
Did it still blink? Like, was
it
that
did
a...
still blink because 3.0.
Yeah. Because
right.
3.0, that makes sense. Yeah.
There we go.
So that's Timothy Cleaver.
Thank you for the story.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, James, as you requested it, I request that you now share your story.
Oh, okay. Well, I haven't played any games in a while. I've been running a couple.
Let's say welcome to the developer seat. We know.
Yeah. I've run a couple. I'm running a hex crawl now.
Okay.
With my players because they had one of them inherited a barony in a relatively unexplored wilderness and they are exploring it to try to figure out, you know, find resources, make it worth being there. And so far they have found a pond where there are a bunch of buckets upside down, just floating on the surface. And they couldn't move the buckets. Well, it turned
out, totally fine.
It turned out that one of the previous barons of the barony, because it had never been well explored, but it had been basically someone's vacation home for a very long time. And he was a serial killer, and he would kill his maids one at a time and burn them and put their ashes in a bucket. And then toss the bucket into this pond.
As one does.
And so night falls while they're camping on the shore, because they're trying to figure this mystery out, because one of them is a gnome alchemist and one of them is a witch, and they're both very much into solving occult arcane mysteries.
I mean, if you have a gnome alchemist, I think the story just kind of explains itself. You didn't have to go any further than that.
She was upset because she couldn't set anything on fire.
Again, gnome alchemist. I
relatable.
Yeah.
Yeah. From the pond, as the sunset rose, the ghosts of all the dead maids. And so they're trying to figure it out, and they tell their story. And it's very clear that if anything goes wrong, because they're fixated on the one character who's the baron, because they can't tell one baron from another. As far as they're concerned, this is the guy that killed him. And so he steps up and makes a speech. And I say, go ahead, roll it. I say to myself, anything but a natural 20. They're going to attack, and they're going to have to fight off 100 ghosts. And I had planned for, you know, I had made little ghost swarms for them to fight with. Rolls a 20.
Random number gods, man.
And so now their manor has a bunch of ghost maids to keep it clean.
Oh!
As one does.
That's cute. And also horrifying. But
so,
like,
yes. I actually, we seem to have a necromancy theme going tonight. I actually have a story that involves more necromancy than one should ever have. Because I've been developing so much and not getting able to play, as we've stated before, I'm actually trying to run games on Fridays, and I don't have anything planned. Little one-shots just to kind of mix things up. Newbie-friendly, all that stuff, open invite. So I ran a 6-level 1 last Friday. And the players are just told, all right, so make 6-level characters. You're going to be exploring the Fountain of Youth. The church, the local bishop, priest of a deity has said that there's one out in the middle of the jungle. Go find it and figure out what it is. Well, the players go ahead, take a guide, get down there. This one guy made a skill monkey monk, long story, and had like ridiculous fucking perceptions. It's like plus 20 something. So every encounter I had in the jungle, they just all found immediately before it was time. And they go to this place and they're like, oh, okay, you're attacked by these rather large, grotesque kind of lizardy things. And they have like a big sail on their back, and you know, they fight them off, and they're like, okay, cool, whatever. So they get to the Fountain of Youth, but they find it's inhabited. People are around it. These guys in a cult are there, and they're like, oh, you guys are kind of cool. Oh yeah, come sit down, it's fine. Come join us. It's all good. And the players are like, oh, this is great. Okay. But why is it inhabited? And then the ceremony starts. And they start bringing out the dragon bones. Now, do you know what dragon bones are in China?
They're the names they dinosaur used for bones?
Steers and stuff. Like,
they were the name they used a lot of times for fossils.
Yeah.
So these guys were resurrecting dinosaurs.
Oh, okay.
That's awesome.
So we had Necromantic Park. Run by a bunch of cultists. And they're like, this seems a little awkward. What happened to the previous people who went out here? Oh, no, they died. It's okay. But they came back. You're like, they came back? Yeah, just like the gnome.
Yeah.
They're like, well, how do you feed the dinosaurs? And they're like, oh, well, we obviously, you know, they're fine. No, can you explain that a little bit more? Well, they don't eat people. They eat the subhumans. And they're like, okay, I'm of good alignment. I got to ask you, what do you mean? Well, apparently what they were doing was they were taking gnomes because they thought gnomes were subhuman and feeding them to the dinosaur, tossing them in the Fountain of Youth, which would resurrect them, and they would, because apparently it wasn't just Fountain of Youth, it was reverse your personal timeline to an earlier point, or your body to an earlier point, so they would die, become dino feces, toss in the puddle, come back to life, fed again, and if you died and recycled enough times, you could escape the endless cycle of torment and become awakened and transcendent. And the players just lost their shit. And then a Tyrannosaurus attacks them, And the skill monkey wrote, or monk is like, I have no combat abilities. And everyone else is like rolling ones. And I'm like, guys, it's CR9. You can't fight this. There's a really easy way to do it. And they're like, no, no, no. We got this. We got this.
Oh,
and they're getting
players.
Curb stomped until I'm like, finally, like five rounds in the combat. One player's already on the ground. I'm like, make an intelligence check, please. They do. And they realize that the freaking pond, which they had used as a healing potion and had healed people and resurrected them, if they stood in it, they would get healed. Oh, cool. So they stood in and fought the T-Rex. And their favorite NPC from that night was one of the cultists, was a gnome who had gone through the trials. And it was their mantra was, the greater the suffering, the greater the reward. So they decided in the end to blow everything up and just say, nope, 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 nope. And they walked off. So Necromantic Park.
There we go.
Awesome.
The next one is an evil game. So
this sounds like the Fountain of Dysentery to me, but
it really was.
Yeah.
So they, like halfway through the game, you're like, it's inhabited. Fuck, this is not going as we expected. We thought this would be a happy adventure.
Nope.
But yes, also remember, it is fine to shepherd your players at one point if they are just going to run in and suicide five times.
I mean, depending on what you're going for, I mean, you benefit from the fact that, like, if it's a one-shot, then, it matters slightly less. But
For a campaign, it would have been a neat hook for them all to die, then get tossed in and come back and have to fight.
That was the joke, was if they died, I was going to have them go back that way, and they were all going to lose their fucking minds. Because they were all already pretty pissed off at the things. And one of them had been healed in it, and they were like, okay, ew, no, 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 no. Is that a gnome? Nope. Is that a gnome? I don't want to.
Fountain of Dysentery.
And they had to kill the gnome, who at the end was okay with it. But yeah, good times. The thing that the lizards they fought in the beginning, by the way, were Dimetrodons. So they didn't put that together until like the end. So dinosaurs, they're great. They're great encounters. Just don't stand next to a T-Rex at one round zoom. Was it Owen who wrote it?
What?
There was that art. It was on Gunslinger Monk Dragon.
Probably. My go-to is Owen's written everything.
I have a ninja dragon.
No. There's an article on the mechanical interplay of the gameplay archetypes of the Gunslinger, the Monk, and the Dragon, and how it's like rock, paper, scissors.
Oh, yeah, I think that was Owen.
It was an interesting one, and it kind of, the dragon, I fuck everything up, but you can probably hit me. The T-Rex fits that mold very well. Watching them one round, it's pretty interesting. The one round a player going, don't stand next to it, and then they run up and hit it, and you're like, all right, then. So, oh, look, a crit.
Yeah.
I don't know. I like when my players think that the total party kill is like the end of the game. So I'm like, no, you wake up in the river Styx. Bite your way back out. Yeah.
Everyone who plays a bard or rogue in my campaign has the threat / promise hanging over their head that they'll get a shot to come back as a forever jack.
What is a forever jack?
It was a 3-0 or 3-5 thing. And essentially, if you were a rogue or a bard, you got to roll, like, the GM rolled a percentile dice, and, like, you added in, like, your charisma or something, or in your level, and the thing was, is that if you got the right section of numbers rolled, then you woke up, and Death's like, hey, sorry to interrupt your afterlife, but I need you to do me a favor. And essentially, you get your own, like, mini quests to go do something for Death in the afterlife, and then, like, you get to come back, but, you know, of course, there's always a catch.
Always.
And so there's always, like, a wraith or something after you that's trying to rend your soul into oblivion or something.
Yeah.
And, I don't know, it had some weird arbitrary stuff, like, you take penalties in the dark, or if you're not in the dark, rather, and you regenerate, and, like, they're real quick to point out that, like, if you got stuck under a rock slide, you are just screwed. Because, like, you'll just keep regenerating, but you're just still under the rocks.
Love
sucks
it.
To be you.
All right. So the next part of today's show, we'll be talking about our favorite working projects, which is the ones that we worked on.
So, James, do you want to start us off with this?
Sure. This should be something we're working on now.
Yeah, sure. That you can talk about.
Okay. I am working on with Playground Adventures under the direction of BJ Hensley.
Wait, what company? Sorry, I missed that.
Playground Adventures?
Playground, okay. Sorry.
Yep. With BJ Hensley as the lead on the project, we are making a Last Unicorn role-playing game.
Well, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Very excited.
Yes. It's not my cup of tea, but I love IP projects.
Yeah. This is one of two I'm working on. That's somebody else's IP. And it was very exciting because I got to sit down with a book and a highlighter and spend days writing 20, 30,000 words worth of notes on characters and places and try to figure out a map. And the thing is, you know, when it was written, it was not a world building kind of book the way Tolkien writes his stuff. It's very much an allegorical, an allegorical fairy tale type of thing where he's every once in a while, like there's this one point where the prince, Lear, if you've seen the movie, the love interests, he's with the princess that doesn't show up in the movie at all that he's engaged to, and she has to do as part of her their betrothal call a unicorn, and so she's calling a unicorn and they're having a picnic lunch and he's waiting and he's reading a magazine and I'm thinking, wait a minute, he's reading a magazine.
Yep.
You know, yep. There were little things like that you know, you had to account for, and you realize that, you know, is it about knowing your place in a story or going past your place in the story, or finding your place in the story? There's a lot of strange little themes, which we need to work out in order to make the game. But it's going to be based on a new system, which we're calling either Uni or Uni, depending on who's pronouncing it. And the idea is we're creating something that we hope is in between, say, Fate, which is Evil Hat's house system.
Narrative system.
And very narrative. And Pathfinder, which is very crunchy and systematic. We're trying to get something in a kind of a sweet spot where you have a little more narrative freedom, but you still have the options for you fall X feet, you take this damage. And so people who need to know, you know, have trouble answering questions like that on the fly can have a reference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it reminds me, it's my favorite sweet spot. It's where 13th Age falls in, and it's just, I don't know, it's a magical combination.
Yeah. You did that with Hypercore and the Hyperscore.
I like that with kind of
Savage. But we just made that narrative control another resource.
Yep. Savage Worlds does a pretty good job of it. And I admit that in looking at things, I did take my old Explorer's Guide out.
As you should.
And take a look over, because that is, to my opinion, the best $10, no bare bones role-playing system out there.
So I bought that book two or three times, I think, because I've used it to the point where it deteriorated. But it's $10, so I don't care, you know? I think one deteriorated, I gave the second one away, and I bought myself a third, you know what I mean? Like,
yep. No, I cut off the spine and put a coil on it.
It's a good idea.
So that because I knew I could tell that the glue was going to go.
Oh yeah, I mean quickly. It's $10 for it's $10. It's not like but I do have their superhero expansion, and that's a nice book, dude.
Well, Pinnacle does amazing work for what they do.
I used to live right next to them, or right near them.
Cool. And that's a big thing. The idea is we're doing it through a modular system where you start off with this and then you go forth. So for example, you could have basically, you can a rule where every turn you can move 30 feet, 60 feet, whatever it is you can move. And that's it. That's the entire rule for movement. But then you can layer onto it, if there's difficult terrain, you have that movement. You know, but we don't say what the difficult terrain is, you know, or any difficulty in climbing, any alternate mode, climbing, swimming, anything that would slow you down and moving, you just half it. But then on top of that, if you want to, you can layer into, if you really like the more simulationist stuff, you know, over slippery sand is this reduction, climbing easy rocks is this reduction, so that you can get to.
You can kind of decide what level of control you want over it. If it's just, you just fucking go up the rocks, it's fine. Just do the 30 feet, but if you really want all right, so this is a really important thing. Can he make it up there this round? Let's see. There's slippery rocks. They got sand on that. They were wet, and it's on a Wednesday. You know, like,
yeah.
But it really depends on, like, how much you need for that scene rather than how much. Because enforcing that's a little bit weird. There's times where people are like, all right, well, how many days does it take to get here? And I'm like, it takes 3 days. And they're like, well, what if, but it's raining though, and we did this, and this isn't a Pathfinder game. I'm just like, dude, you get there in 3 days, it's fine. Unless you have some like method of getting there like instantly or really quickly, it's fucking 3 days. When do you want to get there? 2.5, so I get there at midnight. Yeah, yeah, sure, whatever. You do a fast march, you're good. Like, there's time to care about the details, and there's time to just fucking move the story on.
There is.
Though everyone has to admit, Scott, that clearly rock climbing is more difficult on Wednesdays.
It is, man. Don't you know? I mean, you study your astrology, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Cliffhanger happened
exactly
on Wednesday.
Exactly what my horoscope said.
So, anyone else want? Who wants to talk about their current project next? Savannah?
Yes, I want to hear about other projects.
Look, I'm making a scarf.
That is awesome.
But in seriousness, it's keep on keeping on with stuff I've discussed previously, clearing out my workload, trying to get a day job.
Wouldn't it
also
be nice
making this nice scarf.
What was that?
I mean, it's finally on site. I've stopped taking a new project, so in theory, I will be caught up eventually.
Something will come, and it'll be too nice to turn down.
Ugh. Maybe that's why I'm not going to Gen Con this year.
Hey, Savannah, I have a prat. No, I'm kidding.
Nope.
Now, we got a thing to do, but I have to finish other things before we can start doing it.
Right, but that's like on the roster. If someone comes to me and like, I would like to do an entirely new thing, I'd be like, I appreciate you, but no thank
you. So, Mike, what are you working on?
Well, I got a thing that came out today, actually. For 2099 Wasteland, Valiantor. I've talked a little bit about it before. I really, really, really love the artwork for it. Specifically, Willem Shakespeare.
You mentioned that, yeah.
Yeah, dude. He's wearing a stop sign as like plate armor. He's fantastic.
I
you know what's really funny, actually? So the SCA, a lot of shields are actually cut from old used stop signs.
Yeah.
Because it's the right metal.
Yeah, I think that's where Chan got the idea. Because I just like I need traffic signs, and then we made the shoulder like a yield and stuff, and like I did all the coloring, and I had to figure out like, okay, so how do I make this look like a tire, and the pants look like sewn together garbage sacks, you know? Like, yeah, I know it's cool, and I don't know. I'm just glad that it finally came out because Legendary Games totally forgot about it because it was supposed to come out like weeks ago.
Oh no!
Yeah. And they finally gave me the art dump for the Book of Exalted Darkness, so I will get into the last bits of copy that elude me tonight, which is awesome. Only, I don't know, like 45 descriptions and fluff entries to write or something like that. And then two demons. But whatever, it's so close. And it's 250,000 words or something at this point.
Can you taste it? That is the question.
I can see light at the end of the fucking tunnel is what I can.
I was going to ask what it tastes like, but fine.
You heard about the description of the garbage pants, so you best probably not to ask.
Yeah.
Legit.
No, this is the last 2 days where all the short stories, because I decided to open all the chapters with little fictions.
Nice.
Because I found that's a really excellent way to set up the scene in your campaign book. If you're not adding like small short stories, really consider doing so.
It's really like even just the beginnings of the sections were in Pathfinder books where they just have like the little snippet, like even that is just like so good.
It really helps you paint kind of with words what your world looks like.
And reinforce themes.
Yeah.
Because like there's the Inquisition being a bunch of shady KGB motherfuckers is important, and like Master Inquisitor Octavius shows up in like three different stories, and you're like, by the end of the book people are going to be like, what the fuck is this guy up to? So like even if you only read the short stories, you still get like that theme from the larger aspect.
Well, I think that's one of the reasons. For a while, my old group, when I was living down in North Carolina, we only played license-based role-playing games because nobody had time to dig into a new world. And you could watch Firefly or watch Buffy or read Dresden Files, then it was a lot easier to know the world. And so that it kind of helps in the same sort of way.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot less world building the GM has to do.
Yeah.
Homework the players have to do.
Like, in one short story, I can explain to you what this girl sees in her kitchen on her, like, way to get to the work from her apartment. And I have already told you so much world information that would require a lot more context if I were to present it in a mechanical fashion as opposed to inside of this fiction.
Mm-hmm. Also, it's just so much more fun to read.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah.
Yeah, I am. I do work on Backgoblin Games licensed Castle Falkenstein, mm-hmm. which is a game from the mid-90s that was, it's one of the first steampunk, it's not steampunk, but it's the same time period with magic and stuff, and the technology and Captain Nemo and stuff. And that was presented as a game that's entirely in character. Mm-hmm. Even the rules are written in character, because the idea is a guy from our world goes to their world, and while he's there, he writes a role-playing game mm-hmm. based on his adventures and sends it back. So even he writes the rules and everything is in character. It's a lot of fun to write and know that there's nothing that's out of character.
That's cool.
Except for the legal text at the beginning.
Yeah.
So I mentioned I'll talk about it later, but we're doing playtests for it. I mentioned that Muthian Dragoon thing for Starfinder. We're doing a lot of Starfinder stuff right now.
Space.
Yeah.
How is that going?
It's a new system.
That's
definitely very new. There's a lot of stuff to work out. But that's true of anything that kind of gets off the ground. There's a lot of empty space for things to be filled in, which is cool for us, but it's also kind of a challenge when you're like, all right, so what's a 20th level power armor look like? I think the highest one's like, was it 16? Or 15, the Jarl Slayer. But yeah, it's a little challenging right now. I mentioned it before on the show, but I'm working with Wright Publishing to publish some equipment books for them. When they finally do an equipment book, it'll be filling a lot of things that need to be filled in. But yeah, we're working this class called the Muthian Dragoon, which has a bit of fluff to it. But you can strip the fluff away and still play it. You guys were talking about the whole like intro text, like there's a whole mm-hmm. intro speech. It's fun. But we got That's to play fantastic. That 18th level, which is very interesting. You know what? Mike, you want me to talk about it here or you want me to talk about it down at the Pathfinder section?
Let's talk about the Pathfinder section.
Yes, yeah, so we're doing that. We're doing this book called our Alternate Path series where we're kind of doing second versions of each book. So we're doing Alt Path Divine 2. This one's called Odd Gods. There's a lot of development work going into that, and I fell into down a rabbit hole yesterday, last night on Gnosticism and Kabbalistic stuff, and it may run through the mental digestive tract and come out in there too. But no, we're in development on a lot of stuff. We're toying with playing one. We have two concepts we're in a Kickstarter this year. We're figuring out which one we want to do first. So lots of fun stuff and hopefully maybe a little bit of money for it.
Wouldn't that be nice?
It would be wonderful.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm trying to think of something witty to come up with, but all I can think of are things that are sad. So carry on.
Well, as evidenced by everybody's backgrounds, we are obviously in this for the billions and billions of dollars.
Yeah, I mean,
oh, yes. It's very opulent. Look at this huge 10-gallon tank over here.
I mean, look at the giant tit mug behind me. That's clearly a sign of wealth.
Yes.
Well, yeah, that's my barometer.
How many tit mugs you have?
Yep.
All right. So what about projects that we did not work on, but they're cool?
But they are cool. Can I
have one.
Go ahead.
Because Pathways came out again.
I love Pathways.
I said it's one again.
Not familiar with Pathways, you should be. It's pay what you want, so you can pay them $0 if you like. And this is issue 72. It's all about witches, hexes, and curses. And I think we've all written for Pathways at one point.
I have,
yeah.
I haven't, actually.
I haven't either, actually.
Oh, well, we're special then.
I went into the three-party kind of sideways and kind of skipped Pathways, which is not to say that it's not a worthy publication. By the way, don't pay a dollar. Pay $0. Pay a dollar for it.
Yeah, don't be a dick about it.
I'm just saying, like, it's pay what you want. You should pay people money. I'm just saying.
It's true.
So, I'm not sure if this is... I'll cover that in another section.
James has some suggestions on here.
Yeah.
Go for it.
Speaking of, we talked about Savage Worlds, I am super excited that they've got the Flash Gordon license.
Yeah, I saw that. Okay, there is a huge stink. We talked about this before on the show about the IP, like the ownership of the license and everything. It must have been like a fucking slug down and out fight over like IP shit to sort that out finally. It's glad to see them actually get it.
Well, from what it looks like I briefly got that asked Shane Hensley some questions on Facebook about it, and he said that they it's the old comic strips, and you know it's not like the Filmation series or the movie, or though they're inspired by that, but they've got because apparently the original creator's daughter had rights, but the syndication company for the comic strip thought they had the rights, and
it's been like 20 plus years.
They've been slugging it out for a while.
And that's why, I mean, it was such a mess that's why George Lucas did Star Wars, is because the rights were so messed up he couldn't get Flash Gordon movie. Rights.
Huh. Yep.
Oh.
That's what he got own Star thing. Wars, yeah. He basically made a love letter to Flash Gordon and then tossed in some influences from elsewhere. And we're like, look, guys, I made my Flash Gordon fanfic. Do you like it? It's AU.
See, that's why I can never quite get why some people hate on fan fiction so much, because like so many things are actually fan fiction when you look at it.
Once Upon a Time,
Paradise Lost.
Yeah,
biblical fan fiction.
Exactly. You know what's really weird? Dante's Inferno was like fan fiction shitposting.
Let's say I actually hold the distinction of having written biblical fan fiction.
There we go.
Enoch at one point.
Oh, one of the lesser known
books. Don't suppose it involved a blind man with a machete, did it?
No. That's Book of
Eli. The question is like Martin Luther's thing, if that was fan fiction.
What was
it? I've forgotten.
Oh, that's the angry Facebook man.
Yeah. I mean,
this is what the characters really meant, posting it on the church.
Yeah. Exactly. Yep. That's like the angry guy that's telling you that, you know, telling the writer of Star Wars that telling the writer of a book that this is what your characters really meant.
Yeah.
Right, no, but only if you were like, you're not addressing the author of it, you're like addressing their estate 500 years later.
So yeah. No, I'm really excited about that. There's a couple of, I mean, everyone's excited about Genesis. I guess that's how you pronounce it. The Fantasy Flight's generic.
Yeah. They're fantasy generic.
I'm not super excited about it, but I'm always glad to see something, a new thing for people to play with.
I've talked at length about my issues with their. I don't know. I just sent a comment to Savannah about like rules that I added to Book of Exalted Darkness, because I found like when you play Conan, they use a similar system where there's always these like extra shit that happens whether or not you fail or succeed, advantage or disadvantages. Ooh. They're called the FFG system. Ooh. And they drive me nuts, and they make me afraid to roll the dice. So whenever I want to terrify my 5e players, I add this rule where whenever you roll advantage or disadvantage, whenever you roll a one, like a curse point happens, and then I use the curse points later to do shit. But like it gets them terrified to use the fucking advantage. It's like, I've got three curse points, like should we flank? Like, I don't know, dude. You got four attacks around. Like, I don't want you flanking. Like, yeah.
That's true. So what do you do if they get a natural 20?
Oh, whatever. It doesn't matter. Oh, I
that's terrible.
Yeah. Well, that's what I was saying. I said it to you for your Strahd game, because it's like, oh, if you really want to inverse the horror, like, that'll do it.
And yeah, no, that would definitely do it. No, we are already well acquainted with the horror. We almost had a TPK, like, immediately.
Good times.
Oh yeah, dire wolves, man.
Can I just? I think I mentioned it before. I like Bardas's blog. It's not. I like seeing people take the initiative and just go check out my shit. You know.
Oh, Margarita.
Yeah,
he's amazing.
I just actually I've had contact with her 2 weeks ago, a week ago. Finally,
I've had the pleasure of working with her a couple of times, being our editor a couple of times. She's one of the best people to work with.
I'm actually, we're in the process of talking about, I said, hey, look, love your blog. Go ahead and pitch the shit out of me. Whatever you want to do, let's see if we can make this work. And
I guarantee you,
I just sent an email back to her. We've been playing tag over the holidays, but I wasn't thrilled with her initial round of, like, I like the concepts, but the implementation might need to be worked on, but I'm excited to work with her on it.
She'll pitch something involving oracles at some point.
Not oracles. We're getting some cool stuff out there. Cool. She was also like, she wanted to do legendary level stuff, and I'm like, I do want to do legendary levels at some point again. Our initial foray into Pathfinder, we did epic level Pathfinder stuff. We got a really big response, and it was terrible. Please don't go look it up and buy it. But people still contact us about it, and I'm like, I don't want to shoot myself in the foot on it. It's one of those, like, if I had $1 million, I'd do it right thing, but...
Alas.
Anyway, anyone else have something they want to plug? From that's not yours, obviously.
Not currently. The stuff that I want to talk about is in Kickstarter, so...
Sweet.
All right. Pathfinder and Starfinder news and speculation.
I just sort of realized, like, there's so much less Starfinder speculation now. Like, we're going to have to change this heading slightly. Yeah, like, yeah, it's there.
It's
like,
the not season, wonder. Man. There's also a lull in 5e stuff, and it's going to be that way for another, I don't know, 6 weeks?
Yeah, it's just that time of year.
Yeah.
So,
The discount code for the Paizo store is still good. So if you go there and use the code HOLIDAY18, that's the number 18, no spaces, you get 10% off until January 31st. So go download stuff.
So like I mentioned, I got to do an 18th level play test. We really did delve into the math on it for Starfinder. We also got some play testing for our classes and stuff we're bringing out, but I got to build an 18th level Solarian. We had a fighter and the, what's it called? The armored one, the Iron Man, the not Iron Man. I get to be Hulkbuster. We had a mystic who could heal.
The mechanic with an exocortex he's talking about, I think.
No. It's a fighter style.
Oh, okay.
Like armored blitzer. It's not armored blitz. It's
not something I've gotten to read yet.
Yeah, it's a style for fighter, or for soldier. Sorry, not fighter. But yeah, it's pretty solid. It's so at 18th level, and I'm sure they're gonna fix this by adding more equipment. But at this point, you hit a wall at like, I'd say probably 14th level or so, in terms of like starting wealth of just shit. You have way too much money. There's nothing really to spend it on. Again, once I put an equipment book, I think it'll solve that a bit. But like, even if you buy, I bought a few weapons of my level, suitable armor.
Don't you have a spaceship?
No, but we could buy several.
Yeah, I would think that the money goes into the spaceship.
You could, but again, remember, games aren't always about that, and they say you just get one initially.
Oh, okay.
But even then, it wouldn't. Collectively in the party, we were just buying whatever we could just to burn money.
I enjoy the "you are a goddamn cyborg" subheading.
Yeah, so you guys know how you used to like load yourself up with magic weapon items and weapons and shit. Mm-hmm. The problem is, I want to say problem. Something interesting is augments and like fusions are pretty useless actually. Augments and stuff like cybernetics are what you spend most of your money on at high level. So if you don't have you don't have every part of your body modded in some way, either by magic or biology or whatever the hell you want to do. That's where you get a lot of your big bonuses and stuff. So, like, the weird thing is everyone at 18th level is a cyborg, basically. Like, no one could have anything that wasn't, like, hey, your throat, your eyes, your head, your ears. See, I had all those.
I submit that this was a conscious design decision.
Yeah, I get that, but it also feels like, and maybe it's a bad example, but it feels like Star Trek doesn't occur, you know? I mean, yes, that's a first level. It's weirdly a low, hard sci-fi thing. But even TOS wouldn't work so well. But I played Captain Race Dead Star, who was, I decided halfway through, the protagonist man. Gary Stu wasn't Gary Stu enough. He was his second officer. because you end up with that like the restriction on capping your stats at 18 at first, basically.
Mm-hmm.
But by the time, because of how your abilities grow when you level up, because you get +2 to, I think, is it 4 ability scores or something, unless they're at or above 18, it's really easy to get a lot of your stats really high.
Interesting.
I had most of my stats at 20, except for my wisdom, which I intentionally left at 9. because it's too much fun. But I think I ended up with like 28 or something charisma, 26 strength, and et cetera, et cetera. So I decided the only way to describe the most handsome spacefaring Lashunta in the universe was as protagonist man, and I wrote him like Captain Kirk, the star, Jedi Master Captain Kirk, who has everything ever going for him. He's the best and the brightest. He also had like 22 intelligence or something. I don't know. But you end up with able to get most of your skills maxed out, most of your ability scores maxed, pretty hardcore. But the encounters scale too a little bit. They hit like fucking trucks. Little lower on the AC than we were, we found, at different levels. Initially, the gap kind of is like this much, but at higher level, it gets a little bit more pronounced. But they definitely hit you a lot easier. Their BAB and attack bonuses scale pretty well. And most people have a way to, you know, we were concerned that like, oh, you can only do a single attack now. Most classes that are meant to be martial characters have a way to deal multiple attacks around if they want to.
Yeah. But it's auto fire, right?
No, more what it is the Soldier's Onslaught, the Onslaught class features, like Solarian's Onslaught, Blinding Flashes, or Flashing Strikes, stuff like that. It's very interesting to see the math at high levels. We did things at our CR and above our CR and below our CR, and they all worked out pretty good. Critting in that game is just gross when you hit it right. Weapon fusions are pretty useless, I found. Weapon fusions, instead of being like enhancements or enchantments from like a 3-5, or sorry, Pathfinder, is much more, hey, we're going to swap what you do on your crit. And that's basically all it ends up being.
Which so is it's cool. Almost like the flavor channeling cleric skin.
Yeah. It's like that, but it costs a lot of money.
Ah.
Well,
which apparently isn't super prohibitive at a certain
point. At a certain point, no. Sure. But it's like, hey, instead of doing your laser gun can do knockdown on a crit if you want. Cool, I guess. You know, there's nothing that really improves things. It much more swaps around options for stuff. Which isn't bad, especially kind of customize things. I just wish it didn't cost a bunch of money to do it. But yeah, high level is a lot of fun. You get a little. You guys know, you ever play the Unchained Monk at all?
Nope.
No.
Or just Monk in general is look at all the options I have. I'm sitting here with all these supernatural options, just kind of do my thing. Spend a key point, do one of these 40 things.
Right.
You kind of get, and that's why like option paralysis is a problem. Solarian has that problem at high levels. I had probably a dozen ways things I could do on any given turn, which is cool. I love it. But it also was like, which one do I do? But none of them were really like OP, which is kind of nice. It's a very nice job balancing by their team. But I also was like, I have too many options. But Soldier didn't have that problem because he is, I hit you with my fist. He's in
Hulk. There's something very comforting about that.
Yeah, it is. And that's what the Soldier is supposed to be, I think.
I think that's, Pathfinder has that problem higher. It's just not, not necessarily opposite. You have, especially if you're a spellcaster, you have so many things you can do. It's like, I'm going to, it's my turn, and now I'm going to go through the five pages of information I have to figure out what I'm going to do.
What does an 18 level Universalist Wizard do on his turn?
Yeah.
Fuck, I don't know.
Yeah, anything you want.
I'm introducing my 5e group to Pathfinder. Or at least, like, I'm transitioning two more. Some of them already knew some of it. But their minds were blown. They're like, oh, what sort of classes are they? I'm like, no, let me just send you a link. Like, here's a page.
you should send me all
the classes.
Base class list.
Yeah, well, I sent them to the PFSRD, which had a bunch of the third-party stuff. I'm like, just don't even look at the third-party stuff. Like, it's fine, but, like, this will be your first Pathfinder character. Just, like, aim for, like, the base class stuff, maybe. But, yeah, I think one of them's going to run a summoner, which seems like a questionable choice.
Ooh, yeah, talk to one of them.
What's that?
Move him to Unchained Summoner instead of Basic Summoner. It kind of fixes a few things.
That's fair. I will have to look at that.
For a first-time player, yeah, it'll definitely simplify it.
Yeah. It'll simplify it and make it a little less OP.
Yeah, and I had to talk one of them down. They want to play Spiritualist, which is fine. But I talked them. Yeah, I was gonna say I talked them down to the medium, which is still a bit complicated.
Yeah, but still.
But still, it means that there won't like will be a 6-person party, and so I talked to the person with the eidolon. I'm like, okay, so they're going to be a very friendly shaggy dog sort of like personality. Like they're intelligent and they have feelings and stuff, but like they're not gonna have a running dialogue.
This That's is my, a good idea.
This is my harpy eidolon, and we do a comedy routine on Tuesdays. So yeah, medium. Like you don't fight beside them; they fight as you.
Yay. So yeah, that was kind of our experience. I'll let you guys kind of know if we run anything else. It wasn't bad though. I enjoyed it. I should sum that up by saying it was fun. We had a great time. Things popped. We got to splat aliens. It was good.
It feels like you say you can't do Star Trek and stuff. It does sound like you could do, say, Mass Effect with it.
Yeah, definitely. You can definitely do Mass Effect.
Where you got, you know, the implants and it, you joined the military. Congratulations. Here's your gene augments.
Yeah. Very much so. It feels a lot more like mid-game feels a lot like Dune.
Mm.
Like, Bene Gesserit? Yeah, don't worry. Soldier's going to fuck you up. He's a Bene Gesserit. Oh, we're also working on Soldier Styles. That's another thing we're working on. I'm working that with Sasha Hall. If you remember.
Cool.
She's cool. Anyway, that's about all I got.
I just wanted to expand on the thing about items. I feel like the PFS people were like, please do not give them a bajillion fucking items for us to deal with Starfinder Organized Play.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why there's not like a ton of options yet, because like I think that was probably something that the Organized Play people the whole time were bemoaning, because how many fucking magic items are there in just the core Pathfinder line?
Well, mm-hmm. I'll contest that a bit, because instead of having a long sword, a great sword, and a bunch of things you can toss on it, now there are 40 different types of great swords, and by great swords I mean laser pistols.
Yeah, no,
different levels of different things with different fusions you can toss on them, and different augments and different everything. I think you're going to see that in their next big book is going to be I think they said they're doing the big equipment book soon.
Yeah.
Yeah. The big book of blasters?
Well, that's what I'm writing for right now, but 101 ranged weapons.
That's a very shadow.
I like my title better, though.
Yeah.
Like, I get there's the 101 stuff, but, like, it needs a subtitle.
Yeah. One of my favorite ones in there is called the Symphonic Resonance of the Soul, which is a sonic weapon that gives you an epiphany on a critical hit.
That is awesome.
Yeah.
Epiphany's terrible.
Yeah, it's great because it doesn't define which type, and even says like this might be a nihilistic one, this might be kind of a oh shit, my world just collapsed, or a oh my god, I got a great idea, eureka, or just kind of a dude, like a shower thought of crack. And this is why Owen was like, you need to write this. I'm like, I do need to write this. All right, so what's next?
The only thing I have for D&D 5e is an article I wrote today, because it occurred to me that I'd made a system for, there's a lot of cool stuff that D&D 5e does very well, but calculating spellcasting in monster challenge ratings, or even calculating monster's challenge rating.
I saw your post about that.
I'll be right back.
Yeah, like there's a chart on page 274, 273, or 275 or something like that in the Dungeon Master's Guide.
Right, I was looking at that today, exact.
Yeah, they don't really follow their own rules, and there's like a lot of personal discretion involved. And like they give you, they're like, okay, so if it has this ability, that's +1 CR. If it has this ability, it's +2 CR. But for spellcasting, they're like, oh, we'll talk about it in the monster manual. And then you go and you look in the monster manual, and like
nothing.
They don't. There's like two paragraphs that mean almost nothing. So it's something that I've struggled with a lot, and like. I've done a lot of spellcasting NPCs, and like it occurred to me that I had kind of developed a system in my head for how I do it, and I just had sort of codified it. So like, here's how it goes. Does it use magic primarily or secondarily? Like if it's a paladin or a ranger, or if it doesn't need the magic to work, then it probably uses secondarily, so just use the fucking chart. But if you're using it and it's got spells of higher or third level or higher, then you just double whatever so it's magic, its main thing is magic, and it's casting third level or higher spells. You just double whatever the highest spell level is, and then add that on as like another column to the CR chart. But And it's it's great. I don't know. I today was all calculating challenge ratings for fucking Book of Exalted Darkness stuff, and it went really smoothly. I was really happy. I was like, okay, that's probably where I would have put it. Like, yeah,
sorry about that.
Oh, I was pretty pleased with it. So you could check out at MikeMyler.com where I talk about it. And then the Warhammer hack is almost over. I did Khorne last week. I got Slaanesh tomorrow. And then Tzeentch is the next week. And then fucking Nurgle. And then I think for the 20th post, I was going to do Primarchs, but I don't know if I should.
That's a tall order, man.
Yeah. Like, I know which ones
I already knew the Tzeentch one was coming, though.
Oh, yeah. Tzeentch. Well, I mean, I want to do Slaanesh first. But yeah, Tzeentch. And then, I was gonna do LeMahan Russ and Magnus because they're the two Primarchs that stand out the most to me. Because fuck you, who wants to do fucking Roboot Guillemin? Like nobody wants to.
Well, the thing is, though, I mean, he's actually back and alive now, so.
I know, and like, so they can maybe raise the Lion Lord, they think, and technically
Lionel Johnson, my favorite goddamn
Primarch. LeMahan Russ is out there and promised to come back.
At the fucking last minute.
I take his word, and I believe he'll come back. And also, Magnus is still out there, too.
I just want you two to know you're adorable right now.
they get this way.
Let's say the interesting thing was my army that I played for a while was Loyalist Thousand Sons. Really weird. I know that the Crucible of Ahriman or whatever the fuck it was, but I played them because they had really interesting models, and I got to make some really interesting stuff. Mm-hmm. And, they're painted like green and brown, and I don't know. I love the shit out of them. So yes, please do Magnus. I love Magnus. He's fun.
I don't know, but like, should I give people Primarchs? Because then they're gonna be like, "Well, I want to fight the Primarch," and it tops out at CR 30.
Yeah, you can kill it.
And are they CR 30, or would the God Emperor be CR 30, or like, does he deserve stats? Like, I don't know.
Don't. Well, here, if you do it, you got to make sure Cypher can kill him.
Yeah.
Cypher's
No. Not giving something stats is my favorite line of defense.
Yeah. Well, here, what if instead of doing stats, you just were like, all right, here's how they would interact with the players. They don't have stats, maybe. Can't beat them, but, you know.
Oh, yeah.
I'm tempted to just be like, and here's the 20th post, and it's a link to the Google document that has all the posts in it, all nice and formatted, and nice. Now I'm going to talk about the process of this and like just do like a little introspective.
That'd be cool.
Yeah.
Maybe we would like to see that.
Yeah. So.
All right. So what do we got next?
That's it for 5e news. I got some other RPG news this week,
actually.
Yeah,
I see, man. Go for it, man.
A couple things. First of all, the Demon Lord needs playtesters. So if you like good games, you should go and talk to him about that.
Oh, shit, dude. I only like terrible ones. Fuck. All right, I guess I'm out.
Rob Schwab. Great. And if you play D&D, you have almost undoubtedly interacted with his stuff by now because he writes all the evil things for D&D. You'll like this, Scott. Modiphius has a bunch of free RPG quick starts out, including Star Trek, Conan, Coriolis, and Achung Cthulhu. That's and a bunch of other ones, it looks like. Shit.
That's a good way to start the year.
Infinity Free RPG, Elite Dangerous, Mutant Chronicles, yeah.
They get an RPG supplement of Elite Dangerous?
They did.
I didn't know it made that much of an impact.
I was not a big fan of the West End Star Wars game. I understand a lot of people are.
Wait, that's why is that? Is that
the D6?
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah.
But I know it has its flaws, but I really like the Saga D20. Edition in the preceding one.
Yeah, dude, it's fucking great. I liked Owens. Owens Star Wars is excellent. But yeah, if you like the West End one, they're re-releasing it as a 30th anniversary thing. They're taking pre-orders now.
Yeah, we are living in a weird time where companies that make RPGs are licensing RPGs from companies that barely exist anymore.
Yeah.
To release, it's kind of strange.
I talked to this about to a couple people about this, but like at Gen Con, I noticed that like we breached $1 billion in the industry, and like the big wigs are realizing there's a lot of money here. So, like, licensing ramped up over the past couple of years. It was really noticeable this last year, and it's going to be super noticeable this year.
Well, it's I'm excited to be working on license product, but it could get you too. Look at what it did to a poor Margaret Weiss and her game, the Marvel.
I actually turned down a license thing because I knew I couldn't. I didn't want to grab that tiger by the tail.
It eats you.
I do have an interesting one that might be coming up though. That thing is a kind of huge license. but lends itself really well to it's a book series that's like a lit RP. You ever read those books? And I really enjoyed the series, and I really want to do it as a thing. And I contacted the person. They're like, shit, I never thought about that. And I'm like, all right, man, let's do this. And it wouldn't be a huge product. It would be like the equivalent of like a module kind of.
Mm-hmm.
It wouldn't be huge.
Like the Vampire D thing Pathfinder did.
Yeah, it'd be something small. Yeah, exactly. It'd be something like that. Maybe, it might even be smaller. Just literally like, here's a few iterations of this dungeon. Go nuts.
DSR did stuff like that way back in the day.
And that's literally what it would be. And if it catches on, they'd be like, I'd be like, all right, guys, let's do the world. Let's do the campaign book. Let's do it. But I'd like to see how that works out.
I think that's going to be some companies. I think there's a lot of small IPs out there. You know, they got cult followings.
Yep.
Web comics, YouTube channels, animations.
In before someone says, let's do a PewDiePie RPG.
No.
Oh, my God, no.
I can imagine those would be cost effective. And, you know, in some ways might even be better because you get your 100, what they call the 100 true fans.
Yep.
The people that are always willing to get it just because it's got the right name on the cover. And, you know, so if you get the right one,
mm-hmm.
You don't have to worry about, you know, giving 80% of everything, 80% of what you make, of what it sells to them, and 40% of it to the bookseller, which is already 120%. So there's
mm-hmm.
negative 20% left for you.
So guys, that means that coming up in next week is Logan Paul, the horrifyingly bad taste RPG.
Dare I ask?
Is that the guy from the Suicide Forest?
Yeah, the guy filmed the Suicide Forest in.
Oh right, idiot,
that asshole. Yeah, next up, guys, we're making that as a module. Don't worry, it'll be in better taste. And by better taste, I mean this is horrible. Yeah. Why would you do this?
Actually, a really tongue-in-cheek YouTube simulation game would be really neat.
It would be hilarious. I would dig it.
Yeah, that would be fun to play.
So, James, you want to do a project after this?
I don't know, man.
Paranoia where you make the thing set on the internet.
Yeah, there you go. Man.
So, Mike, I see you're talking about the initiative tree thing here.
Yeah, the initiative tree went viral. I don't know if you can pull a picture of it, but I put a picture in the chat.
Is that the thing where you have the clothespins and the
chair? Yeah,
clothespins. Yeah. I made one of those. I made one of those as soon as I saw it.
Well, so that's been around for like one of my friends who's been DMing since the original D&D was like, oh yeah, we used that back in the day. And I'm like, I know, it's not like a new thing. Or when like we used to use magnets and shit on like a whiteboard to just arrange it. It's like, cool, whatever, you know.
I use a piece of paper and pencil. It's insane.
No, I use roll 20.
Yeah.
Easy there, Mike.
I have an initiative tracker on roll 20. But that's it. That's all I got for other RPG news this week.
So, oh, man. That's what I...
What's up, Savannah?
Oh, the person who's writing the Curse of Strahd game. I need to figure out when their birthday is so I can make them an initiative tracker because they're a new GM.
Ooh.
Oh.
Nice. Yeah. I got a new package of Sharpies. I could do them all up in fancy colors.
There you go.
Yeah, normally I'm the asshole who just scribbles it on the side of his playmat going, all right, fuckers.
Yeah.
So, Kickstarters.
No, other media of interest.
Other media of interest. Oh, that's right. We have media of interest.
I assume we've all seen Bright, right?
I have not, actually.
You should. Nope. It's surprisingly good.
Oh, wow. Only me and Mike?
Yeah, like even Steph was into it. She was like, I don't know, I don't want to watch this. Like, just give 5 minutes. And she's like, okay.
I'll say I enjoyed it. It was a very daring exploration of the topic, and they jumped in with both fucking feet. They did not like hold back on any of it.
Like, I don't like how many people are making allusions to Shadowrun. Like, it's not like Shadowrun. It's like modern deep Dungeons and Dragons. Like,
it's like deep 20 modern.
But here's the thing. How many people know D20 Modern? How many people know Shadowrun?
I mean, like, are they saying it's like Cyberpunk?
No, they're not saying it's Cyberpunk. They're saying, hey, look, there's
but that's
magic
what Shadowrun
modern,
is. And that's the fucking defining thing about Shadowrun is that it's
Cyberpunk.
No, I totally
agree. But as a cultural touchstone, you're gonna the smaller.
I'm saying it's a weak illusion, and I don't like when people say it because it's like that's not accurate.
But here's the thing: if you dug that movie, you might dig Shadowrun.
Yeah, maybe. If I were going to say to someone, explain to someone what is Shadowrun, I would start with,
yeah,
watch this movie. It's not the same. It's in the future, but it's a good starting
point. No way. You could just have them watch the commercial for Shadowrun.
Oh, I love that commercial. Actually, I will, because I'll say, in my game, everyone looks exactly like that. I do my Shadowrun 80s style.
I'm going to say Johnny Mnemonic. That's my Shadowrun movie.
That's a good Shadowrun movie.
That is a good Shadowrun movie.
Keanu Reeves, was it Laser Whip?
Laser Whip Sun and the smart ass dolphin.
Yeah, dude. Well, don't spoil
it. I hear a sequel has already been
For Bright.
Uh-huh. Oh, for Bright, yeah. There's a sequel.
Right. I'm like, fucking, they're pulling Johnny Mnemonic out of the trash.
Yes. The guy who wrote the original script for Bright, I guess, is not involved with the sequel for some reason. I don't understand.
Because he apparently is an abusive, sexist jerk.
Oh, great.
Oh, good.
I know I haven't watched it because I've been spending all my time watching playthroughs of PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds. It's not a game I'll ever play, but it's fun to watch people play.
It's Battle Royale is what it is.
Oh, yeah. I saw someone make a prediction that every multiplayer mode this year is going to have a version of it.
Oh, no shit.
Oh, and I saw today that Game of Thrones is that the last season is in 2019. I assume that they're just trying to get it out before sex scandal Game of Thrones breaks.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sort of surprised that hasn't already been.
Me too, right? You'd think, like, I mean, you look at those guys and you're like, dude, that motherfucker right there, like, has definitely done something.
Mm-hmm. You know? Mm-hmm.
And with that big of a cast, you're like, how is this not blown up yet?
Right? Yeah, there I was going to say, that's like half the cast just because there's so friggin' many of them.
Yeah.
Good
on you if you're all behaving yourselves, Game of Thrones cast. I hope so. The probability of it is very low. That's all that we're saying here.
Black Mirror came out.
Black Mirror came out.
It had one good ending.
I was okay with like 2.5 of them.
No, I don't mean quality. I mean like happy ending.
It's kind of not the point of it. It's not to be happy, is my understanding. So.
Right. Well, that's why it stood out. Like from what I heard, the writing on the happy ending one wasn't very like it wasn't up to standard.
The happy ending was not like let's take the fucking lottery home happy ending. It was
just, right, like, but I think hell. They're just making an ultimatum. They're like, you know what? This can either end not terribly depressing, and the writing will be terrible. Or it's just going to be terribly depressing, but well written.
Yeah. Black Mirror is always that series. It's like a gumball machine. You turn it, like the little toys that come out of it. You turn it, and half of them are really good, and the other half are like, I just wasted a fucking hour. Great. So there were a few of that. The first one I thought was fucking great.
I think it definitely more hit than miss.
I just finished up the romantic dating app one. So.
Yeah, that I think that's the one she's talking about.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's not like fucking heaven. Like, yeah.
But yeah, I'm enjoying that.
What else is on this? Cool, we watched two.
See, I'm still reeling from 2017. I don't need to watch Black Mirror right now.
a while back, my wife had breast cancer, which was obviously a horrible experience for all of us. And at that point, I stopped watching anything even mildly depressing, and I haven't worked myself back into being able to watch. Sounds like I still haven't watched the next Marvel shows because I'm sure they're very good, and I like them. But the most I've gotten is British mysteries are a lot of fun.
It's the true moral of this story.
Yes, watch British mysteries.
You've seen Doc Martin, right?
I have not.
Oh, go watch it. It's fucking great.
I watched most of Father Brown, which is amusing, and Rosemary in Time, and I'm on the one about the guy that goes to the Caribbean island.
No.
Okay. It pops up, but if you enter in one in Netflix, you'll get all of them. So.
Yeah, Doc Martin is great. Big city, high energy doctor. Goes to sleepy little town in the, like on the coast, and is just like, it's great. I can't do anything else before beyond that, but do not watch Luther if you want to do that.
No, no, I'm not. Yeah.
Don't watch Luther. Oh, yeah. God, don't watch Luther.
Doc Martin says, is that the one about the doctor who develops a phobia of blood? So
no,
Luther entire?
Is Eldritch.
I'm not Luther.
Yeah.
I know Luther. Yeah. That's the one about
Martin
the...
No, Doc Martin is just, he ends up in the country due to fuck up and is just, like, the most serious dude in the world, super high-strung, and, like, everyone else is just like, oh, hi! And he's just like...
That's what it was. We mentioned Luther. That made me think of Martin Luther. Callback, 95 Theses. That was his Facebook rant.
Yeah, that's what we were talking about. Yeah.
Yes, I just couldn't think of, like, the title.
I couldn't think of the title either, but I remember, like, he posted some shit that bitched about the church.
Yeah, it was, like, 95 Theses.
95 Theses.
So, Mike, yes. You're talking about Dave Chappelle here in the notes?
Yeah, apparently he's done doing specials for a while. We'll see how long that lasts. But they were very good, and they just went up on Netflix. And so if you like Dave Chappelle, watch
one of the interesting thing is after the Chappelle show, he went through a lot of shit. He was like, it was very racially charged.
He talks about it.
Yeah,
okay, he talks about it.
Yeah. He goes through a very interesting artistic thing, kind of transition after that, and I like his stuff after that too.
Yeah, no, like I said, it's solid and funny too. Like we laughing really hard. It was good too.
He was saying basically he got tired of other people telling him how to do his thing.
So I don't want to totally ruin it, but at the end he's like, to give you the reason why I left the Chappelle show, you should read the book Pimp by Iceberg Slim. And then he talks about how that's relevant.
Interesting.
But to give you an idea why I left, like that's, I feel like that's a pretty good general point.
So the last thing I have on here is
Animaniacs
is coming back.
Yeah, two seasons on Hulu.
Yeah, it's two seasons.
I don't know.
I'm kind of like, don't fuck this up, dude. Do not fuck this up.
I mean, I'm sort of worried because like they brought back DuckTales.
Is it just the Animaniacs or is it the full spectrum of the Animaniacs? Like, is it only Yakko, Wacko, and Dot? Or is it like the, you know, Mobster Pigeons and Pinky and the Brain? And
I mean, they'd have to have Spielberg involved. That's like his shtick. That's why that's why it was good. You know that, right?
Because he insisted on it being good.
Yeah,
I don't remember the development of it. Yakko and Wacko and Dot doing stuff, but I remember the Mobster Pigeons and forget Pinky and the Brain. Like, you know? So that's what's going to be the break for me if it's just the Animaniacs, if it's everybody.
So the thing is, like, if you guys don't know the whole story behind it, like, Spielberg was like, I want to do a kid's cartoon show.
Mm-hmm.
And Warner Brothers said, sure, we're going to throw money at you. Just go do whatever the fuck you want.
You're Spielberg.
Okay, so they're also getting Pinky in the Brain, which means that the Animaniacs thing will not necessarily be quite everything.
Thing is, though, so Spielberg did that, and that he was a driving force as to why it was funny. He had a bunch of voice actors he'd worked with. That's why they had such a great cast. Held them to certain quality standards and yada yada. But that kind of makes me concerned going, because it doesn't say Steven Spielberg's so into this and wants to do it. It's just kind of like, look, nostalgic property, you know?
Yeah.
It's a production company, though, but that doesn't mean it's Spielberg himself.
Well, we'll see. A while back, they did Looney Tunes as a kind of Buddy Oddfellows sitcom.
Yeah, I saw that.
And it was actually really good. I enjoyed it a lot. And the musical numbers, if you get to see them on YouTube, there's a role-playing one.
Yeah, I've seen that one with Daffy, right?
With very heavy metal thing. That was
That's going to be my bar, is are the musical numbers up to snuff?
Yeah, if the musical numbers aren't.
The other thing is, you guys brought up DuckTales. DuckTales was great when it came back.
That's what I've heard.
Right,
I haven't been able to see it.
I'm just like, we can't be like, statistically, something's going to go terribly tragically wrong.
I mean, it has. We've had a few of those that kind of die off after an episode or two, you know. But
keep in mind, we don't know what a season is, too. A season can be 8 shows. A season can be 3 shows.
Well, I mean, if you listen to fucking Netflix and their obsession or their Voltron series, apparently 6 episodes is a goddamn season.
Yeah, that was weird.
And it depends on the property.
They stopped it halfway through a season just to give you a break and put it out there.
Like another one of the really good Netflix things that came out is this documentary about toys, and they talk about He-Man, and like the He-Man property was fucking stupid, massive, huge in the early 1980s, and they just tried to redo it, and they had way cooler action figures, and apparently the animated show was like really tight, but like it just didn't take because they were banking on nostalgia for something that was way too simplistic for people to really delve into.
You know what the actual original like concept of He-Man was, right? They wanted an action figure who could play with both the space line of toys and the more fantasy line of toys that they were putting out. So that's why he is a space barbarian. So we could play.
Yeah, you should watch the toys documentary thing. There's still argument about like who's responsible for He-Man.
Mm-hmm.
The artist guy's like, oh, I did it, and the guy who made the first sculpt is like, no, I totally fucking came up with it. You just made like the drawing. Like, yeah.
and they're all based on Amazing Man, who was a Golden Age comic character who has the exact same appearance as him, except he has an A in the center of his chest.
Oh yeah, they specifically talk about Frank Frazetta when they're talking about He-Man. Like, there, yeah,
does he have the hair?
You should watch it, Scott. Like, you will specifically enjoy the toys documentary series. Cool. I'm talking.
I'll have to look it up.
What about the hair?
Oh, does Amazing Man have the He-Man hair?
Oh, the He-Man.
It's a little different, but it's in the same vein.
I was going to say, because that's sort of a crime against humanity.
She-Ra, they actually blamed for tanking the line.
They just announced the new She-Ra remake.
Savannah, your expression is perfect. Sorry.
I don't blame her though, because you know it's very easy. Oh, we did something for girls and they didn't.
Well, she's that is a correct response, but like it's also exactly what happened, because like the marketing feedback that I got was, now that my sister has her own He-Man, I don't care about this. Because it was all about I have the power. It was
the power with girls.
One thing was, He-Man wasn't as cool.
But there, at that point, the demographic was also aging out of it.
That's also true. Yeah.
You know,
that's what I'm blaming for it. Well, and it's also like the super simplistic thing. It's part of why the nostalgia fell through.
Yeah.
Like, it can only be a fad for so long.
It was a moment in time, you know?
Yes.
Yeah. They really capitalized on it too.
So, do you want to move on to Kickstarters? We want to talk about He-Man.
Yeah, we should talk about Kickstarters. I got a Frankenstein thing.
Post up the link, and I'm like, wait a second. So what? Great minds thinking of like.
Yeah, I saw
it. I saw that today. Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Sure. It is a theme game where you play. Oh, it just funded recently. In the past hour, I think. You play as like monsters in Frankenstein's castle, and you're trying to figure out why Dr. Frankenstein is insane.
If you want to figure out why, go read Paradise Lost.
Or I guess survive. I mean, like it's not an open world system. It's specifically built for this story to tell.
I don't want to say gimmick, but it's a theme game.
No, I got you.
Yeah. And the guy who's doing it is Angus Abramson, who's great. He's been around for a long time doing RPG stuff. And you should check it out if you like horrors and monsters and things like that.
I'm not loving
it. Honestly, Matt, do you have anything you want to say about it?
I just really like the, I guess you'd call it the prose, where it talks about production. And I don't know, just the descriptors that they use. It's bodies from which the brains are cut out first are thrown unceremoniously into an enormous metal funnel, dragged through by giant cogs and torn apart into their various sections by the ripping action of machinery. And like that's part of your character creation, is that like you're choosing like how high quality your limbs are, or it's like, you know, are you missing an eyeball, like did part of you get like stuck in a gear, like it's so centered around the fact that you are a manufactured creature, but the descriptors about it are just really good.
If they don't use like Victorian style paper dolls for their character creation system, they're missing something.
That's such a good idea. I love it.
Tell Angus.
The people who do extra credits, they do the one called Extra Sci-Fi. Now it's a series. And they did a multi-part series deconstructing all of Frankenstein and its themes. Ooh, it's such a good watch.
All right.
Shelley's work has a lot of interesting themes, especially if you look at the time, and you know, it's not Victorian, it's Regency, which is slightly different. It's earlier in the reign, mm-hmm. earlier it's the 1840s as opposed to the 1870s. But and you know, this is the time when we don't have evolution yet, but we have, you know, people experimenting with running electricity through frogs. And if the if the dead frog can jump, then why can't you bring someone back to life? And what does that mean? And you know, not too long after the French Revolution, where they literally invented new religions in which they proclaimed God dead.
And then they had the crazy Bacchanalian parties in Notre Dame for the Cult of Reason.
Yes, the Cult of Reason. They'll be showing up in my parish source club.
I'm even sure. It fucking better. They also have the what is it? She has a really weird relationship, like very atypical, especially for the time period, with her sister Lord Byron, her sister's husband, and like at one point she was in several menage a trois, and just like she had a very interesting outlook, and I really she's kind of an inspiration when you look at what risks she took and what she just said in her work to kind of reinforce that. She just kind of took what the establishment was and was less like, all right, come on, let's make this a little bit more humanitarian.
Yeah, what's neat too is because she published under her own name.
Yes.
And, you know, some people thought that Lord Byron wrote it. You know, you have like the Bronte sisters who published under men's names. So that was a very daring and very forward thing to do.
All right. Cool.
Also, Frankenstein is one of my favorite examples of how climate affects art.
Mm.
Because, you know, a lot of weird shit came out the year without a summer, and Frankenstein was one of them.
Yes, well, you're looking at the sky's not there, and then the sun isn't coming out, and you gotta think something bad is about to happen.
Oh, yeah, no, yeah. It's interesting.
So, what are these tiny tables?
I don't know.
Oh, yes, the tiny tables. So they're meant to be terrain, like houses and that sort of thing for your world. And, like, they look interesting. Like, they fit together. They're fairly simplistic. They've got, like, dungeon walls and, you know, hallways and that sort of thing. But when I looked at them, all I could think of was, like, are they selling tiny fantasy furniture? Because that seems like a cool concept. And I was so automatically sold on this idea of tiny tables that when I actually clicked on it and found that it was, like, walls and stuff, I was actually surprised.
You know,
like, Savannah, I know what I'm marketing to you next year.
Exactly, exactly. Savannah, no, I will be your one of your one true fans. Or your 100 true fans, rather.
I see they have shirts. I will be doing shirts the next time I do a Kickstarter.
I will not be.
Yes.
I like shirts. I think it's a good idea.
I mean, you're wearing at least two right now, so I assume.
Oh, did I not tell you guys what I got? Okay, well, let's do the other Kickstarter first. There's one for Starfinder called The Widow's Tear, Cosmic Horror for Starfinder. It's from the Gunmetal Games folks. Go check it out.
Oh, I accidentally erased that one because I thought I referenced it a couple weeks ago. It exists.
So I got Steph. Every time I do a book, I get like an artist to do a rendition of her as like an illustration in the book. So I have like five of them at this point. So this year for Christmas, I got her a shirt that is just covered in illustrations of her, and also a blanket that is covered in illustrations of her.
So just in case you forget what she forgets what her own face looks like.
No, but like, how could she not have liked that gift?
To be fair, it would appeal to my sense of vanity, so I can only assume.
Another one true fan. Right. See, there you go.
Yeah. Exactly. So I don't know. I was just like, yes. Perfect.
I'm starting to think
the t-shirt is very silly. The blanket, I think, is the optimal version, but I love the idea of having a t-shirt. It's like, yes, this is me. Five versions of me on
the
shirt.
She's got like two rooms of clothing, so I was like really unsure about the shirt, so the blanket was the safe gift, and the shirt was like, if it fails, it fails.
Next year, I have to get her a flag.
And I got my dad like a mug with his illustrations on it, and my mom like a little like pouch thing, and like my brother, I got this. Okay, so I made a shirt that just says "fucking robots" on it, and it's got a bunch of robots.
I saw that.
And he's a big guy, so I had to get him the extra large one. And they just printed the shirt onto a shirt, so it looks like a shirt printed onto a shirt. And it's just fucking robots on it. So I was like, "That's perfect. I'm not changing this at all. Like, this is exactly what it should be."
That's so ridiculous.
Fucking robots, right? Yeah.
A shirt of fucking robots.
Mm-hmm.
That's very good.
I know. I hope it gets him laid. Like, that's my dream. I don't know who he wants to lay with, but I just, as long as they like the shirt and it helps in the process, I will feel good about it.
So, right, how was your romantic relationship with this person? And then he's gonna be like, I don't know, they like the shirt though.
I have to wash it like all the time.
It's been stolen 3 times. I've had to hunt people down for it, but like, I'm not emotionally connecting with them, but they love my shirt. Mike, what have you done to me?
It's cursed. Just slightly cursed.
You get him a couple extra.
Yes.
The dispensers of it.
Fucking wizards. What else could I do? Fucking dragons. I could definitely go fucking dragons. I think I got like 7 dragons.
I feel like a dragon like graphic print t-shirt is like the equivalent of like the 3 wolf moon thing. Like, as soon as
I've been smart about it. Like, I made these Mists of Akuma ones where the mist covers everything that would not be printed. And then they look really dope.
Or like, it kind of feels like wearing like a dragon print tee is kind of like driving up with that van with the kind of really cool but still kind of little off image on the side of it of like a dragon or whatever, like a death metal scene on the side. But it was done by your cousin, so it wasn't really that good, you know?
That feel.
We'll see. I think my dragon shirt's going to pop.
I hope it... Well, I mean, let's see the hardest critic here of them all. Savannah, would this appeal to the Savannah demographic?
I haven't made the dragon shirt yet, or I haven't showed it to her at least.
That's fair. You'll have to run it by me. I will boast my review.
I made a couple like basic Mists of Akuma ones using the bigger illustrations and then like the cover, and then I have to do one for each prefecture. So I have to make like 26 of them. And, like, it's all...
That I don't know that...
No, it'll be a process. So they'll all look similar. So you could get the Kyokusuna prefecture and also the Ramono prefecture. And they'll just be like, here's the country cutout. Here's the image for the character. Here's their like flag. And like, I'll just swap those. Yeah.
So,
for those of you who are wondering, no, I don't think Mike sleeps either.
I don't.
So, do we want to move on to James's section here?
Yeah.
So James, it's an invite.
Puzzles.
You want. Yes. I see you have some notes, but go nuts, torture us for the next 10 minutes or so.
Well, I love puzzles.
That's just
right. I love puzzles in role-playing games, and I don't think that they get enough. I don't think they get enough love.
It's very difficult to
awesome,
do them well.
Complicated folding puzzle in one of my early adventures, and like nobody gave a shit. So I was like, "Well, fuck it."
I get that. No, I get that. For example, without letting anything else, the adventure I turned to get in today was essentially an escape the room adventure, where they've got to do puzzles. And there's a lock that is a puzzle, and I include rules. I include the hardness rating of the chest and the disabled device DC, and I made them ridiculously high for reasons.
So that they never can do puzzles. Underestimate a player, though, you know?
No, they can, if they try hard enough, they can crack that sucker open. But
puzzly thing I did. I made Infinite Dungeon, so I didn't have to do a map request. Mm-hmm. Save them some money. And basically, it was just like, because I don't know if you realize this, guys, but people tend to design dungeons going to the left or to the right like this, counterclockwise, starting from the south or from the north.
That's,
but it's always almost,
that's not how I do it.
Always, I mean, like, here's what I do. My rule is always go left. And every time that I have ever done a dungeon, I've subverted whatever the fuck we're supposed to do by going left, because it ends up being the shortcut to get out. Like, every
I mean, time. Conan always goes left, so...
Exactly. So with this like Infinite Dungeon, I was like, all you have to do is go right. If you only go right, after like 7 rights, you get out of the dungeon. But if you go left, like, you just keep going in. Like, if you take left and right, just keep going in. If you go straight, keep going in again.
Also, if you want an even more classic version of which direction you should go... Sleepy Hollow guy. What was his name?
Ichabod Crane.
Ichabod Crane.
Ichabod Crane went right, and look what happened to him.
Yeah.
Well, you know the bug, the wrong term in Albuquerque, so don't go that way. One of the things with puzzles and games, especially in like a 3-5 D20 thing, the problem is, and it kind of was something I faced in that story at the beginning, was players aren't always on the same brainwave as you, even if they're perfectly smart.
Yeah.
But for example, we had a we had this thing called the Gauntlet, where we had to run through the 1-hour module of 3 different GMs or whatever, or 2-hour module of 3 or 4 different GMs, and got progressively harder and whatever. And this guy, Caleb, had a dungeon, and it was a big puzzle. It was like basically a rotating thing with inside of a thing, and fucking no one could figure out his goddamn dungeon. And it was just like, at the end of it, he's like, guys, make a fucking int check. Just here, here's what you have to do. But like, because we missed one key bit of information, it was very hard to solve. And you lose players' interests after a certain point of, all right, so I solved this one, and I solved this one. I just want to fucking hit something now, dude. Can I hit something? You know, like...
Yeah, I think you should always have a backup plan for, like, what if your characters don't, you know, or what if your players, rather...
Stop doing fucking interactive puzzles, because you end up spending hours and hours getting it to work, translating it from here it is on the page to here's the thing you put in the player's hands. And like half the time, they just don't make the logical leap. So it's a waste of your time, and they have to default.
And that's a roll 1d6 to see if they make the logical leap.
Yeah, there's ways. A, you're right. Puzzles challenge the players, not the characters.
Exactly. It's a good way of putting it.
But if you build in a hint system where you allow skill checks to give hints, that helps make it a lot better. And also, I think... I'm not going to say anyone does anything wrong because everyone games their own way, but I would not make the entire dungeon a puzzle.
No.
I'd make a lock on the door a puzzle. Small things that are relatively easy, you know, 10, 20 minutes of solving if they're having a particularly hard time, and then they move on. And it's just something to break the monotony, to make it different, to make the brains work. And because this particular adventure is designed for children, to make them think in critical ways. Which is, it's a big thing with Playground Adventures to work on puzzles like that. But I like them, and I think they don't get used because a lot of people, either they like it all in character or they don't really think. They just had bad experiences and they just leave it out. And I think GMs get lazy too.
I think it also helps to have visuals. Because if there's one thing players really like, myself included, you wanna hold something and look at it and turn it upside down.
Okay, don't laugh. I wrote a Pony Finder adventure.
No, here's the thing. I'll talk about that in a sec, but go ahead.
I think at least, like, I don't know if Scott has, but that makes three out of the four of us who have worked on Pony Finder.
I have not worked on a lot of it. But the thing is, though, it's a lot of people's cup of tea, and I've heard great things about it. And I will defend it to the day I die. It's not something I would do, but by God, was it Max Silver? Is that his name?
I think David Silver is finally starting to use the fucking editing guide I gave him, because I haven't been contacted for more work. So, like, good for you guys.
Yes, yeah, I do his layout, so yes, at least his writer, and he's learning to format his documents properly, which is fantastic.
Yeah, I gave them a style guide, and I was like, look, at the top of it, I'm like, just save this as whatever your new title is. And then just use all the things that are here. They've been doing it. It's good. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Man, the layout. It's much easier to lay out his stuff now than it was.
The stuff they gave me was so sloppy. It was all.
I wrote this Pony Finder adventure, and there was a box at the beginning, and the box had you know those puzzles where you press you light up a square, and all the squares next to it either light up or turn off depending on.
Yeah.
I did one of those, and I said, you know, now, you know, get 9 coins. And if they're lit up, their heads, and if they're not, their tails.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
And do it that way. And that, you know, I think you're right. A visual with a puzzle like that. And the puzzle, the one I just wrote, they play a game of Simon at the end. Not Simon Says, but, you know, the color match.
Yeah, the electronic one. I got it.
And I said, we're going to include the color cards in the adventure as cutouts.
So one thing... we did at one point, we had a class called the Skirmisher who had a mechanic that was based on you could take a number if it was lower on the adjacent side of a d20. Because every side is a square and a triangle and has...
Right.
You could choose it if it was lower and you got some cool additional effect if it hit, still. But trying to convey that with words is really hard. So I went ahead and I made images and it works great. I think it's a good way of doing it. I feel like if you're developing a puzzle for a game and it's integral, you should put as much work into the puzzle as the players have to.
Yes.
That makes a lot of sense.
So, no, and I did. For the puzzles in this particular, and for any puzzle, I draw, if they need diagrams, I draw diagrams and I send pictures. And I expect them to turn it over to an artist and make them pretty. But you know, it's like this one puzzle is it's four concentric boxes, and inside each of the boxes is a dots, and it's a combination lock, and you have to figure out what the combination is based on the dots in the box.
So I ran this is a weird thing to say I ran, but I actually ran a 40K role-playing form at one point. We ran big plots and it was really fun. The problem was I at one point gave him an alphanumeric cipher to decipher something.
Oh.
And it was literally just like A equals 1, but it was shifted by one letter. And these guys lost their shit over it. They lost their shit, not in a good way, in a holy shit, why would you do this? I'm so pissed. I'm going to quit. I'm like, dude, fine, fucking whatever. We gave the Inquisitor because it was an Inquisitor that depending what you played, you had some bonuses. And the Inquisitor got bonuses on solving. We added at that point, the Inquisitor's got bonuses on solving puzzles. Here's half the hints, you know, like. So.
I enjoy that idea.
It was great. It was good. I actually did it on the Star Trek site too. But the players had a different mindset. It's very interesting what fandom does what thing. And they broke out goddamn formulas. And they were like in a fucking Skype call. Like, all right, so we have to go ahead. And over here will be this. And this will be over here. All right, so then we can find. All right, 10 minutes later, here we go. And I'm like, I fucking love you guys. Yes.
But it's, you know, you go into Warhammer and you expect to smash things.
Well, they did smash things, except for the Inquisitor who wanted to solve things, and I gave her something to solve, and she's like lost her fucking mind.
That's cool. I don't know if you watch Gravity Falls.
Yeah, I finished watching that a month or two ago. It was great.
Did you watch the credits?
I haven't solved it, but I've seen it. The ciphers at the end of each of them.
Yeah, I believe they're Caesar ciphers, and then they switch over to rail ciphers. Was
different.
Right.
They had a different cipher based on it, and it was like, fuck. But no, I've never been the asshole who was like, all right, guys, find a reference book and try to do your, like, I'm not that much of an egotistical dick. I would just, players would hate me if I did that stuff. There's also a thing of, you brought it up earlier with, what's the difference between what your character can do and what you can do?
Because
if I have a 29 intelligence, I don't have a 29 intelligence. I don't have an ego enough to say that I have a 29 intelligence. I may have a 29 charisma. No. But a 29 intelligence. But my character should be able to fucking solve this thing like that. You know, like, at least that's skill checks. But I don't think skill checks that auto bypass are a good way of doing it.
No, because it reduces the point of being there.
Also, not just my character's smart, they should know this, but also taking into consideration my character has a 29 dex. And so whenever it comes to, like, navigating this trap-filled room or whatever, they should have a much more inventive, hands-on way to do this than, like, you know, I run in a straight line and roll some acrobatics checks.
Well, I wrote, a one-on-one adventure for Expeditious Retreat. I find a lot of people haven't heard of them because they don't interact with
I'm familiar with the name. I forget where I've seen it. But then again, I maintain those lists of campaign settings and base classes and Starfinder options.
Among the things I do is a series of one-on-one adventures. Yeah. And I think their compendium was at the top of Paizo's third-party sales last year.
Oh, that's cool.
But it was all challenges like that. And there's this challenge where you had to work your way through to the center of a hedge maze. And the challenge was at the front there was a cipher which gave you the hint to figure out how to get through, which was the colors that are hanging on the flowers on the hedge maze. If you follow them in reverse order from violet to red, you can make it to the center, because it went violet, then whatever, Roy G. Biv, indigo, but the thing is, I made sure that if you were a thief type character, if you're a rogue and you decided that you wanted to go climb up the side of a building and look down from the top into the hedge maze, you could figure it out. If you were very perceptive, you could find the secret passages the gardeners used to move through the hedge maze quickly when they're maintaining it. You could chop your way through the hedge maze. You'll end up doing community service afterwards. I always made sure there were at least five solutions. In this adventure, there were 10 different challenges, most of which were puzzle-like, if not straight-out puzzles. And I always made sure that each one had at least five different solutions.
I had, I was part of the female link game jam, And I made a very interesting Legend of Zelda style game, like an action adventure one. And I watched someone play through all the games on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
And my submission was in there. And, you know, Zelda is a puzzle game at its core. And he ignored every fucking thing. And it's like, this one of them was just like, he ignored every damn hint. I'm like, read the fucking sign. It's right. It says, do this. Wonder how you do this. The sign. There is one interactable thing. Click on the sign. What? No idea. God, fuck. And you switch between one world or another, and there were some differences to them. Like, one was, like, the good world, and one was the land of leaves. And one had enemies, and one didn't. And he did not fucking get, like, half the time the answer is, switch to the other world. That's the main mechanic of the game. Never once where the fuck do I go now? I don't know. There's a door. It's blocked. If you open the thing, if you switch to the, oh, look, it's there. And I'm just like, I'm sitting there, like, peeling the skin off my face as I watch this. I've watched it, like, 3 or 4 times. Anytime I'm, like, feeling good about myself, I'm just like, let's go relive that failure.
Yeah, you didn't. You didn't fail.
No, I know. But things, though, I maybe could have been a little bit more obvious about it by being, like, a fucking arrow. I don't know. A bullseye. A, like, person sitting there going, right here, click here. Like, there's a voice that said just like, no, idiot, go click that. But
there's I played Dishonored 2 recently, and at one point there is a logic puzzle, you know, one of those puzzles where they give you, you know, these 5 people are at a dinner party, and one's wearing red and one's sitting to the left of the other, and they don't tell you specifically. I enjoy those kind of puzzles. I don't inflict them on.
Like, I'm glad you enjoy them. They drive me mad.
I don't inflict them very often to other people unless I relatively simple ones. But it was interesting because you could skip the entire level if you solved the puzzle. And so I sat down for an hour because it was a particularly complicated one with 6 factors, and I solved it.
You're mean.
I got through. And it was a lot. It was very interesting. I will eventually go back and replay that level to see what I missed. But apparently the big thing was you get to avoid a moral dilemma where you pick the tyrannical religious order or the chaotic street gang as your allies.
No, good.
You know, so I got to do that. But actually, after that, it had a neat kind of puzzle level where you go back and forward in time. And, you know, in the present, the place is a ruin, and in the past, it's perfect. And there's some places you get through in the past and some places you get through in the future. And sometimes in the past, if you change things, paths open up in the future. That was a lot of fun.
All right, so it looks like we're about at time here.
Yep.
That was an interesting topic. I really hope to be working that a bit more in the future.
Yeah.
Any last thoughts, guys?
I'm stoked. Next week we got Claudio Poses, which is awesome because Claudio is great. I love Claudio.
Awesome.
Not to say that you're not cool, but like Claudio is just
super. What are you done with you, James? You're chewed up dog food.
I'm a 42-year-old.
I mean, to be
dad.
Fair, Mike buys most of his shirts via Claudio, if I remember right.
That is also true. Half of my shirts are for.
So, like, he's clearly biased. Jay, you should clearly put out shirts.
When I see Claudio, I'll give him bear hugs.
You know, I'm a 42-year-old dad. I'm not particularly exciting at all.
No. Your discussion on game and puzzle in the game was very interesting. And I don't glad know you came here. I'm
he's
sure
like
45. Viewers will love this one.
And he's a dad, but he lives in Rio de Janeiro, so that kind of makes him like an action star.
I gotta say, yeah, he lives in Rio. That puts you up a couple of levels. I've got a fair number of this got odd. I found a fair number of fans in Brazil, because there's Castle Falcon has kind of popular there.
Yeah. They have a weird following in China for some reason. I can't figure it out.
Well, congratulations!
I have like 5 people who regularly post on the Facebook page with just Chinese names, and I'm like, well, hi if you guys are watching this. I love you. Yes, but like,
ni hao.
Yeah, but like, fuck it, man. Like, you never know where you strike gold. All right, guys. Thanks for joining us. Hope you join us again next week.
The podcast you just heard was recorded with Anchor. If you want to make your own, download the Android or iOS app completely free from anchor.fm/podcast. That's anchor.fm/podcast.